At the age of 5, he knew what he wanted to be. Joined sailing school to follow his dreams when he was just 12, and National Defense Academy at the age of 19. Today, he's in his late 60s, but works like he's 16-year-old. The energy and the zeal that he gets along is tremendous.
I happened to meet him once and since then started following him. He is a master trainer, transformational coach, motivational speaker, educator, and an author. And also very passionate about making difference in people's lives. Let's welcome him. Okay, a very warm welcome to my podcast, Total Edge, where we get stories, talks, and interviews with known and not very known, but very successful people in their industry, their journey, their struggles, their movement of triumphs, and a lot more to explore over the conversation. I am so happy to welcome you, Brigadier Sushil Basin.
Thank you very much, Priyadarshini. It's such a pleasure to be interacting with you anytime.
Same here. Always, you know, I'm like a small kid looking up to you, listening to whatever that comes out of your mouth. Always like, what is new that I'm going to learn? What is new thing that I'm going to listen to now? So, okay, so, you know, let's just start with, how difficult was it for you to leave a respected position after serving it for like 34 years at Army and then decide to come out to start something new from the scratch, and that too at the age of 54?
Yeah, so I really don't know whether it was difficult or not, because I remember the more easy parts than difficult parts. I took off from Bangalore on the 1st of October 2004. That's the day I took my premature retirement. In that 2 hours flight, I conditioned myself to become a civilian. I told myself, Sushil Basin, you're no longer a brigadier. You will have to now work on the ground. You don't have a PA. You don't have a team. And you're going to start a new business. It's going to be a challenge. Are you prepared to travel in the train? Are you prepared to do this? And I said, answered to myself, yes, I'm going to make it work. So two things. One, that when I left the army, it was a very deliberate and a thought over decision. It took me about 2 years to mull over it. The excitement was so strong. The purpose of my life was clear, that I wanted to make a difference in the youth, because, you know, that's what happened in the army school when the head girl gave me that scroll. You know, that was a story. So it had given me a lot of energy, a lot of boost. And there was an excitement that I had a goal to achieve, and that won't let me sleep. So the dream that doesn't let you sleep. So therefore, I was prepared mentally and emotionally to face any amount of difficulties and challenges.
We'll probably talk about the difficulties a little later. You said you realize the purpose of life. You know, let's just talk a little about that. When is that you realize the purpose of your life? When was that turning point? Throw a little light there.
So, you know, Priya, it was like this, that I was posted to Bareilly and I was told that I'll be the chairman of that army school. That is not my professional job. These are additional welfare-oriented honorary positions that we get in the army. So because army had started its own army schools, so they have somebody from the army to take care of the management. But the school runs like a normal school with a principal and all that. Now, the challenge that was given to me was that this school with 2,000 children, a 17-year-old school, was doing very badly because for 2 years there was no regular principal. 5 principals had come and gone in the 2 years, and therefore the school was directionless. And I was told by my GOC, my general officer commanding, who's my boss, he said, I know you'll do your job very well, but this is a great challenge. And then he said, I asked him, sir, what's wrong with it? So he says, you know, the school has a couple of groups and a lot of politics going on. And he says, most of these teachers are army officers' wives. And pardon my saying so, he said they do more of bitching than teaching. There was nobody to take leadership position. The head clerk of the school, who was 17 years into the system, had become a power. He had become a self-appointed authority. So it was a challenge which I took over. I was not into education. I didn't know how to run a school. But the army has a knack of teaching you how to handle anything. You see, like if a boy falls into the well, the army is called in. We are not trained to take out people from wells, but we are capable of taking on anything. That is what there's a system that teaches us to take a project as a project, see what needs to be done and do it and get it done. After 6 months, there was a function in the school at which the head girl came on the stage and she said, "Sir, I want to thank you for all that you have done for us." And then she said lots of things. But the last thing she said was extremely touching. She said, "Sir, thank you for restoring our pride." We used to be ashamed of ourselves when other children in the colony teased us and said, "Oh, you go to the army school." And we used to feel bad. So today when they say, "You go to army school," we say, "Yes." And the whole school stood up and clapped. Now that was a touching moment for me. That, okay, in 6 months' time, at least the children have acknowledged. And I was getting lots of calls from parents who are very happy with the way school was going. And then this girl called me on the stage and said, "Sir, please accept a small token of our love for you." And what she gave me was a 12 feet long scroll in the shape of a pencil on which 800 children had signed a thank you note. And that is what changed my complete purpose of, you know, I discovered that, okay, I had done a lot of things for the army and the army had not really acknowledged all that. But look at these children. They have acknowledged my 6 months' effort so beautifully. So there's a long story, but I won't talk about that. That I was traveling home in the car and I was having a conversation with God. And I said, "What can I ask you for? You've given me everything. Now it's time for me to give back." I reached home and I told my wife, "I have decided to leave the army. I have something to do with children." And she said, "Are you mad? You have put in 34 years and now is the time to reap the fruit of it." And I said, "No, I found the purpose of my life. My calling is for children and I'm leaving." So it took me about 1.5-2 years to plan and come out of it. And then when I came out of it, then I was so focused on this purpose that nothing else mattered. And I continue working on this purpose and I'm really enjoying
it. Great. I think, yeah, thank you is something which is very, very, very powerful. And now talking about your difficulties, now that you decided that you will, you know, quit army and start your journey from the scratch, can you talk a little about your, you know, difficulties and also the lowest point in your life?
Okay, so my lowest point of life would be much before that. Let me start from there. I was a very young boy. I was just about 10 when I decided to join the Sainik school. I don't even remember how it happened, but I guess whenever I used to walk to school in Shimla when I was a very, very young boy, I used to see these army officers walking on the road to the command headquarters. And they used to always be in groups of 3, 4s, and they were really like marching on the road. And I always had great admiration for them. And there was a inner desire and undeclared desire that can I also be an army officer. And then some opportunity came up where I got to know that there are some admissions open for Sainik schools, and I applied and I got through. So I went to a Sainik school and 4.5 years I was there, and now life was totally focused onto one direction. I never faced this problem which most children would do as to what career should I join, because in class 6 I decided what career I'm joining. So because I was in the Sainik school, nothing else. I never thought of anything else. It was for me, army, army, and army. There's nothing else. And now, age-wise, I happened to be a little underage. So when my classmates appeared for NDA, I couldn't do that because I was not eligible. So I had to wait for 6 months. I was underage, yeah. So I joined 6 months later. But that also means that in NDA, you get 5 chances to appear. So one always feels that, okay, first time, if I can't make it, I'll make it the second time. Or I'll make it the third time. So you got 5 chances. So I went for my first services selection board to Meerut. I got through. So sent a telegram home. There was nothing else, no other way of communicating those days. So I went to the post office and sent a telegram, got selected. And then after the whole thing was over, there was a medical test. And in the medical test, I got rejected. And I got rejected for something which is very funny. It was called hallux valgus. I don't know what it meant, But what it meant was that when you stand with your feet joined, your toes should be joining. Whereas there was a V shape, that means my two toes, big toes, were a little away from each other. It formed a V, a hollow V there. So this gentleman tells me that this is not acceptable. So it's called hallux valgus. So you are permanently rejected, which means that now there's no more chance. So that becomes the last chance. That was a little too difficult for me to take. So I didn't cry. I yelled at him. I said, "What? How does it matter?" He said, "You will not be able to run." I said, "You make all these 50 people in my batch. Let's go for a run right now. And I promise you, I'll beat them all. I'm a cross-country champion. Who says I can't run?" But he wouldn't listen to me. And therefore, there is a normally in the end, they say that, so here are the results. And in the results, they give you a little sermon to say that if you're not selected, doesn't matter. Army takes a particular type of people. So if you're not selected, doesn't matter. You'll do well elsewhere. But for me, there was no elsewhere. I was so determined. And for me, it was like the whole world has fallen for me and I don't know what to do now. So I remember results were announced and I was told that I'm declared medically rejected. So I came out and for some time I just stood. I remember there was a wall there. I stood next to the wall and cried and I cried and I cried. And now I also didn't know how will I break this news to my mother, who at one time didn't want me to go to the army. But when she saw me so determined, she was hell-bent upon supporting me to go to the army. She would be fasting and she would be doing puja for me and all that. All sacrifices she did for me. So a great thing that she was very unhappy with my father to allow me to go to the army. Particularly, I went in 61 to the Sainik school. And when 62 war took place, she was very unhappy that why are you letting him go. But here, my father told her also, now it's an excellent chance. Now he has been rejected, so he doesn't have to worry. So now, why don't you come and join my business? But telling my father, "Daddy, if I am a total failure in life and I find I can't do anything at all, then I may take that option as the last straw. I'm not going to do business. I'm going to join the army." And then it's a long story that I went for a medical appeal. And in the appeal medical board, I got selected. But that 1 month from the time I was declared rejected or declared medically unfit to the time I finally made it, that 1 month was probably my lowest month. I really have a feeling of that dark cloud around me because I had not seen any other option. So there was no other thing that came to my mind. And it was very sad. But thank God, all happens for the good. So I came out of it, yeah.
Then hats off to your determination at that age that you were like, I want this and nothing else apart from this. Not everyone is lucky or, we don't really realize what is that we want at that young age, isn't it?
Yeah, and now that you're talking about it, another incident comes to my mind, which Aarti, who did my website. And that was when I got commissioned. I joined the army and I had a backache. And I was just about 20, 21. And again, I became a medical category, which means that now promotions would be difficult. And my ambition of going high in the army was again gone down. And things happened where I went to the hospital. They operated upon me, a lot of things. And then one day when I was really desperate, I wanted to do anything. If somebody said Ayurveda, I went to Ayurveda. Somebody said homeopathy, I went to homeopathy. I was prepared to do anything to get my back right. And then I met a guy, a doctor. He says, "Sushil, shall I give you a sure cure for your success or for your well-being or for your backache?" I said, "Ah, sir, batao." You were so excited. Somebody is there to tell you that. He says, "Learn to live with it. The sure cure is learn to live with it." At 20, somebody's telling me that I will have to live with my backache all my life. I wanted to slap him, but in the army, you can't do that. I used to write a diary those days. I went back home and I wrote in that diary. Very, very upset. Very, very annoyed about what he had said. I said, I will tell this bastard that I am not going to learn to live with it. I'm going to overcome it. And within 4 years, with whatever I did, with whatever treatments, yoga, exercise, today, I'm even at 67, I'm walking around. And from where I saw my career coming to a standstill, that my promotion to a captain was going to be difficult, well, I rose to the rank of a brigadier and was a brigadier for 8 years. So somewhere, again, this little dip came in that, what do I do now? My career is gone. But I have found both these cases, your determination and your self-confidence and your belief, your self-belief. If you believe that you can do it, no one in this world can stop you. No one. The day you tell yourself, I can do it, and you mean it, it comes from within your heart. It's not a superficial conversation. It is deep down there. Then nobody in this universe can stop you. That's what I said in my book. There's a chapter called You Are Unstoppable. And this term I picked up from Tony Robbins. You are unstoppable. The day you think you got your purpose right, you got your, then nobody can stop you. Then you say, I am unstoppable. Let me see who can stop me.
Okay. Do you have a secret, or do you know, now that you are a master trainer, transformational coach, and a motivational speaker, have you figured out, is there a way to figure out the purpose in life?
Yeah, there is. A lot of people have asked me this question. It takes time. It takes time. And sometimes you may not be able to do it at all. Many of us leave this planet without knowing the purpose of our life. But does that mean that you lived a purposeless life? No. So I give an example of a bee. When a bee goes to a flower and sucks nectar and then goes to another flower and sucks nectar and picks up some pollen, it's called cross-pollination. But the bee never knew that its purpose was cross-pollination. You know? Okay. Similarly, if you do what you ought to do, which means whatever your parents have taught you, whatever values you picked up in your life from your family, from your religion, from your community, from your environment, from your teachers. If you keep doing what you ought to do, you may be achieving the purpose of your life even without knowing it. So you don't have to stop. You don't have to stop and say, first, let me find my purpose of life. No, you keep doing what it is, but you start looking for what's your purpose. And what happens is if you go deep, take a deep sea dive inside you and keep asking yourself, what is it that I love doing? What is it that if I do, I will get the maximum happiness? And what is it that I can't live without? That this is something I want. And if that comes to you, that is your passion drives you to your purpose. And this is what I picked up with Tony Robbins. Every one of us requires a coach and a mentor. Somebody outside you to guide you. Because the content of a bottle can't read its label.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yes, a content of the label cannot read what is outside. Yeah.
You know, so the outsider knows what you are. So I know you more than what you know yourself. Because when you go a little astray, I am standing outside. I can say, please go a little left, right. But when you are inside, like inside the car, and there is a bus that stops in front of you and you stop behind the bus, all that you see is the bus. You can't see what is ahead. You can't make out where the traffic jam is, how long will it take. And yet, if you talk to somebody, ring up somebody on the 14th floor of the nearby building and say, can you tell me what the situation of the traffic is? That is what like a mentor is. He's on the 14th floor. He's already gone up higher than you are. So he, from his experience, will tell you where to go. He'll give you directions. So you need to have a coach and a mentor.
I was just about to ask, you know, how do one figure out someone as his or her coach or mentor? How do one, you know, zero out to someone? Is it just okay that the person is doing something great and has, you know, gone through the path that you may want to go, or there is more to that also, but then I think you already answered that.
Generally, they are quite synonymous, but there's a subtle difference. But otherwise, you need somebody to guide you. Somebody to guide you. And who's this person? Three things have to be there. Somebody who's competent, somebody you trust. And the third thing is that you know that for this person, your success will be more important to him than his own. If these three conditions are met, then that person can be your mentor.
All right. So we talked about your struggles and how, you know, you figured out your purpose of life and everything. Now, after 34 years in army and 14 years as a transformation coach and a motivational speaker, what is the moment when you felt that you have achieved what you ever wanted, that moment of triumph for you?
When I did my TTST and I had 100 people sitting in the hall, and I was told that you should be prepared because it's an 8 hours workshop and people don't have that type of patience. And because it's a Sunday, and I'm particularly talking of my TTST in Delhi, which was in January. It was very cold, and weather was bad. So I was told if you don't finish your workshop by 6, people will run away. So it'll be difficult for you to engage people. It's okay even if 50% people stay back after lunch, it's good enough, and things like that. It was about 5:30. I still had some more to talk about, and I was told that by 5:30 you should be winding up. So at 5:30 I asked people, I said, I have something more to say, but because time is up, we leave it for another time. And people said, no sir, please carry on. So I said, how much time can you give me? So they said, take another hour, there's no problem. Then I asked somebody, I said, can I, on the stage, on the mic, I mean, I said, can somebody take a head count of how many people are there in the room? And in the morning, we had started with 120. And in the evening at about 5:30, there were 85 people still in the room. That was, I mean, like I said, okay, against all advice and against all people's predictions, that on a Sunday in a bad weather in Delhi, people will not be able to stay back. I still have 85 people engaged for 8 hours listening to me. That, and second, of course, is not once or twice, but a couple of times when I did this children's camps. And when the parents rang me up and said, what have you done to my child? And I said, what have I done? I thought somebody was accusing me. So one mother tells me, my son used to come, throw his bag, run out to play. And now he comes, he first washes his face, sits down, does his homework, has his glass of milk, and then he goes out to play. What have you done to him? I said, I did nothing. I didn't tell him that homework was more important than playing. That is what you do as parents and teachers. And that is what children don't like. They don't like to be told. So I never told them. I only played games and taught them the value of time through games. And at the end of the game, they said, oh, I think we should have been doing this first. And then I told them, what gives you more advantage? Does homework give you more advantage? Does playing give you more advantage? I had some games like that. So they had to figure out, discuss and say, what will they get if they play a lot? What will they get if they do more homework? So I said, without even saying it once, that homework was important. I made them realize it. So that used to show, this is an asset test where what you have done in a workshop or in a camp, through my, the main pedagogy I use is experiential learning and facilitation. So I don't like to teach. It's not a one-sided thing. I don't show PowerPoints. I do. Not that I don't use them, but I don't depend on them. That is not my my focus. And my PowerPoints don't drive my workshops. So with that, those have been areas of my triumph, I'll say. Of course, there have been other things which in life, I still remember the day I passed my staff college exam. That was one competitive exam in the army, and you felt that, oh, if you've done staff college, you've done something great. So there have been occasions like that. That is all I can impromptu remember.
So tell us one habit of yours that has changed, changed your life or has acted as a game changer for you. So tell us one habit of yours that has changed, changed your life or has acted as a game changer for you.
I don't know whether it's a habit or not, but I will say authenticity. I have never ever tried to put a facade on my face. I have never tried to show people, try to show them how I am, what I am not. So in my trainings, in my life, I'm very upfront in telling you what I don't do. I don't falsify things. And people over a period of time know that that I'm my real self and I don't have a double personality. I don't say something and mean something else. So that probably I will say is something that lots of times people have said that's not a good habit. You have to be a little manipulative. You have to do this, that, and the other. But I stuck to this. I can't change that habit of mine, that characteristic of mine. And I'm very happy about it.
So do you have any regrets?
Yeah. If I talk about regrets, if I was to go back in my life and start all over again, one thing I would do, and I want to give this message to all the youngsters, I would read a lot. Today, I've reached a stage where I'm making up for my reading. In my childhood, I never read a book. And I didn't pick up the habit of reading. And today, whether you read on a Kindle, whether you read in a book, whether you read on your laptop, whatever you do. And also now reading can be also substituted by listening. If you're listening to Audible or you see like now.
Audibles and all, yes.
Whether you're listening to an Audible, whether you're listening or watching a YouTube video, that all goes towards that. But habit of keeping your ears open and listening, reading, watching, observing is something I would like to go back and do much more of that than what I did.
Okay. So talking about reading, you decided to, you already have a book and you are working on another one. You know, before we talk about your book, which is your favorite book?
So I don't know of any one book. There were so many books that had impact. But if I can talk of one which comes top of my mind is Whale Done by Ken Blanchard. And why I like this book is it's a very small book with big fonts. You can read it in 2-3 hours. But it leaves a very, very great message. It is Whale Done. And it is not that I don't know how to pronounce Well Done. But a lot of people think that I say well as whale, like some people do in Bihar and UP. I am, it's Whaledone, Whale Done. He says that most people, children, are taught like dogs and horses by a whip. And a whale is taught by encouraging it. So when a whale goes over a rope and has to dive, it goes over a rope, it is given a pat and a fish as a reward. And when it doesn't, nothing happens. So you wonder, why didn't I get a reward this time? So in this book, he has said in every chapter, there is a personal level, a personal and professional angle. So he says, for example, every day your wife or your mother gives you good food, you eat it. And you walk off the table without even saying thank you. But the day is not good.
We seldom do that, isn't it?
Yeah, the day is not good. You'll say, what happened to the food today? Isn't this a little burnt? Isn't this got too much of salt or whatever? So why are we always pointing out only faults? So he says, reverse it. Every day, every single meal, tell your wife what wonderful food. And the day does not, just ignore that. And she'll wonder, why didn't I get that compliment today? Yeah. It's a very good book.
But I think I'm going to order this. So now, talking about your favorite book too, you have also written book like Design Your Life and one is yet to be launched. If you can talk a little about that. And also, what made you to start writing a book?
Yeah, so there was always a desire that I should write a book. But it was in Singapore when I heard Jerry Robert talking about the advantages of writing a book. And somewhere he probably ignited that spark that was always there. You wanted to write, but you didn't write. And he said, you know, he asked people in the hall, How many of you wanted to write a book? A lot of people put up their hands, and so did I. And then he said, why don't you write one? And the answers were, who's going to read my book? And I write a small essay, and there are so many mistakes, and there'll be so many mistakes and all that. So he says, the problem with you all is that you want to write a perfect book. Why don't you write your first imperfect book? And therefore, you'll find in all my captions for Design Your Life, when I came out in the market, I said, my first imperfect book is out.
And that is something, you know, some food for thought.
And it's really imperfect. It is really imperfect. Even today, when you see, there are a lot of mistakes I've noticed, and we need to do a second edition to rectify those mistakes. But notwithstanding, idea was to put across a message. Even if there are some errors, there are some spelling mistakes, there are some words which may not be good, it's okay.
We're so much worried about our mistakes, what will go wrong, without even, you know, going ahead and taking a chance of making it.
I'm very happy about this book because this book has got me a lot of praise from the younger lot when they say that this book is, one, written in very simple language, which they relate to. And secondly, it's all full of stories. So I said, here are stories, no theories. So I don't tell you what to do in life. I only give you a story and leave for you to conclude from it as to what you want to get out of it.
About your second book, which is going to be launched soon. You're working on it.
This is Million Dollar Second. I always thought that time was a resource which we don't really appreciate. We all know it. It's a factual thing. We all know that time will not come back again. We also say time is money. All these things we hear about. But yet how wasteful we are about our time.
I think most of our time goes in social media. That is what I spend. Even if I decide that I'll not waste time on social media, I'll stick only for half an hour or an hour. I have timers and all, but then I tend to, you know, exceed the time. And 3-4 hours is we've spent in social media.
Yeah, it's a lot of distraction. Let me give you a promise and a challenge. If you read this book sincerely and do what is written there, and after every chapter, I've got a little thing where you can write down your reflections or what you learned in that chapter. By the time you finish this chapter, you will, if not eliminate this habit, at least minimize it for sure. That's a promise.
I would love to. Yeah, I'm waiting for the book. When are you launching it?
So hopefully in the first week of Jan, that is what we are aiming at. But we still haven't decided on a deadline because there are some factors which are beyond your control. So like I learned one thing in my goal setting and I talk in my goal setting workshops, that your goals should be performance oriented and not result oriented. To write the book, I can have a goal which I've done. To publish it is not my goal because it doesn't depend on mine.
That's not in your control. I think, yeah, that is all I have today. And thank you so much for enlightening me and all our listeners. And I think there's a lot of questions I still have, but I think keeping the time in view. Thank you so much for everything that you shared.
I'm very thankful to you for giving me this opportunity, and it's been a pleasure. And I'm very happy that we had this dialogue.
So that was Brigadier Sushil Bhasin, who is living with the purpose of educating and transforming people's lives and has got it all with his determination. I hope you like the conversation. Now go ahead and share, subscribe and comment for me to get you some more such inspiring people's stories for you to listen and get inspired. Happy listening and tune in to Tutelage. I'll see you soon.